Back with another episode of the Rugby Player Podcast. I'm your host, Harry Benno. On this episode, I speak to Harry McNulty of the Irish Men's Sevens team. First got in contact with Harry through his brother, Sean, who's playing over here for the New England Free Jacks in the MLR. Awesome to chat with Harry and all the adventures he's been on through his journey and his pathway into professional rugby in Ireland. Hope you guys enjoy the episode. Has.
Yo.
Got him.
He's in.
How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. What are you up to?
The sun is shining today. So I've been out in it all day and put off my work for the day, unfortunately. So going to catch up on that after this when the sun starts setting and make myself feel good.
Mate, how good. That absolute stitch up. We spoke a couple of days ago and it feels like Ireland's getting the best weather it's had in years. Very jealous.
Yeah, I can agree with you on that one. It's just a shame that we can't really go too far away to do anything. But look, have a little balcony out the back, so I can just sunbathe there for a few hours a day, which is fantastic.
Good stuff. And who's at home at the moment?
So it's all of the kids, essentially. So it's me, my brother Sean, and then the two sisters, Ella and Kira. But one of the sisters actually is staying with her boyfriend as they still have jobs, like work from home jobs. So they are on the same schedule where we're a bit more free running around the house. So we were kind of getting in her way. So realistically, there's only three here at a time.
Fair enough.
So it's all good.
Full house, mate. Plenty of activities.
Yeah. So much going on. Loads of cooking. We're doing workouts at home, all sorts. Madhouse.
That's great. Well, mate, let's jump into it. Do a quick introduction before we start diving into the stuff. But for the listeners at home, Harry McNulty, Irish Sevens player, been with the program now since 2015. Met Harry through his brother, Sean, who was on the podcast a couple of months ago. And all Sean's stories from his podcast, actually, he's going to hate me saying this, but seem to revolve around your stories, mate. So I felt like you were the better storyteller. That I'll throw over to you maybe to give us a quick overview of your personal life and your rugby career so far.
Yeah, sounds good. No, Sean's well able to tell a story, in fairness to him, but I'll take any credit I can get, I suppose. So we've had a bit of a nomadic life, as some people would say, or a traveling life. So I was born in the Middle East in Bahrain and was only there for 3 months. And we moved to London, and my brother Sean and sister Ella were born there. And then we moved to America, to New York. And dad was working in the city, and my other sister was born there. We spent 10 years growing up in New York, just outside the city. So never played any rugby growing up, was introduced to it, obviously, through my dad, who played rugby all his life. But, you know, no clubs or no matches by any means. And I grew up playing ice hockey. That was my main sport, which I still love to this day and keep up with through social media. I have a couple of jerseys in my room. Then played baseball, soccer, never really got into American football, didn't like it all that much. Swimming. Tennis, like with the American culture, all the sports are in seasons. So it allowed you to do all the different sports throughout the year, which was quite cool. But then at the age of 14, we ended up moving back to Bahrain. And that's kind of where I started playing a bit of rugby. And then I was only there again 6 months, and I went to boarding school in Rockwell College, which is in Tipperary in Ireland, under my own. It was my own decision. It wasn't forced upon me by any means. And yeah, that's where I got stuck into the rugby. It's a big rugby school, and just played, made friends, you know, never made the starting team at all until I was in my second last year, where I managed to get onto the first team and played there for 2 years and had representative rugby level through Munster under 18, 19s, 20s, managed to get into the academy eventually for Munster. I was there for 2 years. And then that kind of brought me to 2014, which I was let go from the academy. And then I went back to Dublin to go pursue food science degree. I was doing food science anyway when I was in Munster, but I broke it up, so I only did a couple modules every semester, and you know, kind of fell out of love with rugby for a bit. You know, I was playing with my club, but you know, not even really playing with them all too much. I wasn't really making the team, or I'd make it one week and I wouldn't make it the next, and I was kind of fed up a little bit with it. And then Sevens was introduced to the IRFU program in 2015, and they basically came out and said that we're starting a full-time, well, not full-time, but, you know, we're starting a program with the end goal to make the World Series. So there was an open day trial, and my mum actually entered me into that open day trial. Like, it was just enter via email, and it was a CMJ, which is a counter movement jump, so how high you can jump, which is relative to your overall speed. So I can't jump all that high. Take from that what you will. Then we had a 10 and 20 meter sprint test and a fitness test, which was a yo-yo test at the time. It was quite cool. I got to run that beside a guy and friend of mine at the time, Foster Horan, who actually is still part of the team now. So we actually did our testing side by side, and it's very cool that we're still playing together. And then, yeah, so just been playing seven since day one, been a part of the program since day one. We went, we were unfortunately not allowed to join the highest level of sevens in Europe when we joined, or when this program was set up. But that meant we had to go through Division C, B, and A before we were allowed to give ourselves an opportunity to try and qualify for Hong Kong to get on the World Series. So unfortunately it was a 3-year process to get there, but some of the places and some of the rugby that we played over those 3 years was just like fantastic, and really adds to the whole story of the program. And hopefully no other Irish team will ever have to go through that again, because if they do, that means something went wrong along the way. So we went to Bosnia, Sweden, Czech Republic. We played in Portugal, we played all through Europe, Monaco for an Olympic qualifier as well. And in between all that, I ended up in Australia for 6 months too, playing some sevens. Yeah. So I was just been the University of Queensland. I actually went down there to study abroad for one semester. So I was playing loads of sevens down there. I absolutely love that part of the world. And that's actually where I started to my travels and my real, like, I always traveled as with my family in terms of solo travel and documenting and taking photos and kind of figuring my way out in that space. And that's kind of a whirlwind explanation. I know there's a lot going on there, but I'm happy enough to break those segments down. But it's essentially now here we are in 2020, is it? I believe, yeah.
I think it is, yeah.
And we're on the World Series now, and it's been a wild ride, yeah.
Mate, I would say from a rugby player's perspective, you may be the most travelled player from your youth and then playing rugby with the Irish team. Like, I don't know if many guys have got many more stickers in their passports than you do at the moment.
A bit of a journeyman. Is that what you're trying to call me?
No. I think there's stigma that comes with that phrase as well. But I think just in terms of like the opportunities and the places that you've been to.
Yeah, no. I'm only,
pretty amazing.
Only pulling your leg. Yeah, no, I'm very, 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 very fortunate. You know, like stars aligned essentially to allow some of that travel to happen. Like, you know, especially with the Australia study abroad, we finished because the university schedules are different. You know, the Australian school system runs off like the actual year, so January forward, where obviously in the Northern Hemisphere it's September until May, so kind of is split between the year, if you will. So it meant that the semester down in Australia started in July, and that just so happened to coincide with the end of the sevens season in the Northern Hemisphere. So I finished playing sevens on Sunday, whatever, July something, and I flew to Australia that Tuesday. And it was the pre-Olympic qualifier, so the Olympic qualifier, if that makes sense. So we played that in Portugal, and then, you know, Tuesday I was on a plane down to Britain. And then on that following Monday, I was, you know, straight into the first week of university down there. So, like, you know, that's just incredible timing. And because we weren't on the World Series, you know, there was no like preseason per se that I had to be back for, or any tournament in that year that was, you know, very important, or like in regards to actually qualifying for the World Series. So it allowed me to go down, study, play. I think I played about 8 tournaments and sevens down there anyway. So I played more tournaments than any of the guys would have back home. Yeah, and then other travels, you know, just being part of the sevens program, going through everywhere in Europe, playing every team under the sun in Europe that you would never believe to have a team. We played, my first cap for the Irish sevens team was in Bosnia, against Bosnia. We played Turkey, we played Austria, Iceland, Slovenia, Slovakia, Greece, Israel is in there somewhere. These are through all the divisions now. Malta, I think Malta's the most we've ever beaten a team. That was 80-0. It was basically kickoff, catch, score, repeat. So, like, you know, it was just bizarre times and crazy little trips, but actually some of our favorite memories, yeah.
That qualifying circuit almost sounds more glamorous than the actual IRB circuit in itself.
You know what, like, yes and no, I suppose. Like, some of the hotels that we stayed in, looking back on it, was you wouldn't be surprised if they shot The Shining in there. Like, it was some wild times, you know, like these really old elevators that have the sliding doors and you can only fit 2 people in them, but then you've got, you know, 12 to 16 rugby teams staying in that hotel. So it makes movement through the hotel quite hard. But then the food is varying, obviously, through all of Eastern Europe and in terms of their delicacies and stuff. So sometimes you just find yourself not in the mood for whatever's being dished up on that evening. So you're trying to do as quick of a Google search as you can to try and find the nearest, like, shopping center or whatever. But sometimes the rugby culture in these nations isn't in their capital cities, and you kind of have to go out into the distance, and you might be an hour from the capital. So in terms of actually trying to find something close to you, yeah, you might be out of luck. So you just kind of have to deal with what you're served. So definitely really, really cool experience, and something that I really do cherish, in fairness. I think it was just so amazing. And it was cool to have the players that we had then, like, come to the system, and now you see them move on and they're playing for Munster, and some of them have Irish caps and stuff. So they still have that association with those divisions as well. And we still talk about those times and those stories and have a great laugh about them. So, yeah, nearly just as glamorous, to be honest.
There you go. Mate, talking on those early days with the Irish Sevens program, how many of those players are still in the program from day one, like you said?
There is 5, as far as okay. I'm aware, yeah. So it's me, Foster Horan, so we ran the thing together, the fitness testing together, Mark Roach, Ian Fitzpatrick, and Terry Kennedy. So, we've all been involved since day one, and it's really cool to still have all of us involved, and it's super interesting, the dynamic in terms of the changes over the years from an age group perspective. So when the program first started, there might have been 1 or 2 players who were a couple years older than everybody else. So we would have been, 22 or something? Yeah, 22 yeah. Starting off. And the whole team was like 22 kind of thing. You know, really, really and really, like, no diversity in the age, but there might have been like 1 guy who was 25, but they probably stuck around for a year or whatever. And then for 2, still kind of staying the same, but there was 1 guy who was just a little bit older than everybody else. It was usually Foster, and like, he was then, you know, known as the old man, even though he might have been 3 months older than everybody else, but he was the only one at the time who was, you know, say 24 instead of being 23. So there's like these running jokes, but now that we've been in the program for 5 years, I'm 27 now, and there's guys in the team who are like 19. So like, there's a huge gap in terms of the age, and it's so interesting to see how quickly it all changed. Like, I think I... what was it? I was already in college before one of the guys was even going into like secondary education. Like, that's how big of a gap there is. It's crazy kind of stuff. So, like, it doesn't make a difference in terms of the team. There's only 14 guys. So when you travel on tour on like 15s, there isn't really any cliques. I mean, there's a little bit of like younger guys hanging out together more and more, but in terms of like, we all hang out together, no problem whatsoever. But in 15s, there's like, you know, 25 people traveling at once. Like, it's too hard for everybody to hang out all the time together. So you get like the little groups of five here and three there, four there. So it's an interesting dynamic, but it's great.
Yeah, mate. And obviously you guys have had a bit of success over the last couple of years in building on that stuff. Like, what's the exposure been like in Ireland from the Sevens program's perspective?
It's been growing. I think so. Yep. Like you're not going to get advertising on TV being like, Ireland Sevens are going to be playing this weekend. No, not that I know of anyway. But you will have the odd news article. You'll have like podcasting like this. Guys are getting interested in the players, you know, seeing them on the World Series is complete different dynamic. So, you know, you're getting the odd Irish podcaster looking for guys to come on, and you're getting a little bit like one or two guys have a little bit of exposure with our sponsor. So they're like in the shop window every now and again, depending on like if a new jersey comes out, and World Rugby obviously posts Sevens highlights. So if you're just following World Rugby through social media, now you're getting Irish Sevens highlights where you wouldn't have gotten that, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. So just as a whole, people are talking about it more. Once or twice, like someone said, oh, you're on the Sevens team, right? Like, so it's kind of weird in that sense, but by no means is it like exploded or anything like that. And I would love to see domestically a growth in competition. Yep. Ireland has Sevens tournaments, but they are seen as a social event, which is nothing wrong with that. You get a ton of numbers, but you're all, like, everyone's going for the social aspect. So, you know, having beers between games and, you know, getting their mates around, they're getting jerseys like made up with funny names on the back, and they're having a bit of crack, and it's a really great event, and people love it. But they actually really struggle to pull together a like serious men's or women's competition. You know, like, it's hard to get 8 teams to play in the serious competition, but you can still get 100 teams playing in the social. So there's like not a stigma, but there's the idea of Sevens as a social rather than not professional, but, you know, like a high end tournament. So I'd like to see a little bit of a change in that regard.
How, so I guess with that in mind then, like, from a pathway perspective, high school players are sort of coming out of 15s programs and then getting plucked into the Sevens just based on their skill set rather than developing specialized Sevens skills?
Yeah, essentially that's how it's working. So you've got scouts, right, throughout the country through all the provinces. So, you know, you've got like your Munster, Leinster, Connacht, like they'll be scouting through regional development officers is what they're called. So you've got that going on all the time. And if there's some player from way out in left field that like showcases like incredible speed or something like that, the Sevens is here. So they might just like bring him in for a little bit and try and like upskill him or just keep an eye on him, because he might not go into an academy or a sub-academy just because the skill levels there are so much higher. But the Sevens, like, they kind of bring him in because you can kind of learn a bit quicker and just kind of give him more exposure. But what they're doing then is with the academies, kind of guys who are young, so like these 19-year-olds who are out of school that showcase a lot of talent, they're kind of being sent up to the Sevens program to come and train and play against us, and gives us more numbers, gives them increased exposure, you know, more tackles, more one-on-ones, longer passes, solo rucks. And, you know, like, that's grown us, that's grown them, but it also, like, some of those guys have transferred over essentially to getting Irish caps with the Sevens team. Whereas, you know, 6 months before they were probably, you know, bad-mouthing being sent up to the Sevens program because they wanted to stay down their province and give it everything there. And they feel like maybe they're missing out on that opportunity. But realistically, the opportunity in front of them is massive because they get to play on the World Series against some of the best players in the world as well. But yeah, that's just because there's no history of sevens in Ireland. Realistically, no one grows up wanting to be a sevens player, right? You want to grow up playing for your province. So it's just difficult to change that mindset from that you've had from a kid. So I don't know. Maybe there's a kid out there now seeing us in the seven series and they want to be the next Jordan Conroy or like Billy Dardis or someone like that, you know? So that would be very cool.
Well, I mean, the obvious carrot that you're dangling is that world experience of traveling on the World Series as well for a couple of years. So,
you like the stuff. Yeah, well, they should be definitely. Kids, if you're listening, you should be jumping at the opportunity.
There you go. Well, mate, speaking of touring, obviously, which we're going to touch on a bit later as well, your personal life and sort of the creative stuff that you're pushing out at the moment. But on tour, like, what are you doing outside of rugby when you're traveling to all these places?
Yeah, great question. So we've been lucky, obviously, to go around the world and there's so many different places and cultures. And somewhere like, say, Dubai, right? We've been there now 4 times because we have played also in the tournament that runs alongside the World Series. Dubai's and the pitches are in the middle of the desert, but they have a rugby club there and there's 10 pitches, I believe, outside of the main one. So they actually run various sevens competitions all weekend alongside the men's and women's competitions. So there's teams from all over. So they have an invitational men's tournament, which is the highest level sevens tournament you can probably get outside of the World Series. Like South Africa will send their A team there, and so will kind of New Zealand and stuff like that. So we went there 4 times. So now when I go to Dubai, I don't really do all that much, right? Like, I've kind of been there, lived in the Middle East, so I've been to the tallest building in the world, I've seen the biggest malls, I've done all that kind of stuff. So for me, it's a bit more relaxing, maybe meet up with my family if they come out to come watch, or some friends from the Middle East. But then when we went to South Africa, I'd been to Cape Town before with my family, but there were still new opportunities to try new things and see new sites. So I organized for a couple of us through a good friend of mine, Forrest, who does safaris in South Africa and through Africa, he got me like a discount to do a helicopter ride. So we did a helicopter ride around Cape Town, around Table Mountain, like all that stuff. So that was crazy. That was epic. And we went to the city then and saw different like buildings and coffee shops and just kind of took in the sights. So that was epic. Then in New Zealand, we were in Hamilton, so we were basically an hour from anything, and that's kind of the way that they're trying to push Hamilton, is that it's like the center of everything, essentially. But so there wasn't a whole lot to do there except for the Hamilton Gardens, which are world-renowned and so stunning. So my mate lives in Hamilton, and he brought me down there. That was unreal. We spent the afternoon there, but then we had a lot of team activities. So we went to the Waitomo Caves, which are world renowned. They have glowworms in them and they like kind of shine through the caves. And we went to Hobbiton to go see the movie set. And we went to Raglan, which is a famous beach. Went to coffee shops again. So like we got loads of stuff done there, kind of more so as a team. And then Sydney, we were out in the Olympic Village. So we weren't too close to the city, about an hour away, but I've got some friends in the city there. So got the train in and sat at the Sydney Harbour Bridge and just, you know, had some food, took in the sights, went down to icebergs and Bondi, went to Manly, got to see the budgie smuggler team. They're good friends of mine. So had lunch with them. So realistically, wherever we go, it's kind of who do I know, or do I know anybody around? Can I get in contact with them? Like, maybe they can come to the tournament. And is there something that's really specific to that place that we can do? Like LA, again, I had friends there, so like did that. And then Vancouver, luckily, I asked if I could stay on after the tournament, because at the time, Hong Kong and Singapore actually were postponed already. So I knew that we didn't have like a tournament to come back rushing for. So I was kind of like, oh, it would be sick if I could stay out there. And I organized with the captain of Wales, Luke Trahan, who's a good friend of mine. Basically, if he wanted to stay out as well. So we both stayed out. We did like a big road trip in Vancouver, which was epic. Yeah, epic. Wow. So cool. So went, like, rented a Dodge Durango, like the 7-seater crazy van, like awesome beast of a thing. Went to Whistler, went to Vancouver Island, did a hike to a plane crash. Like, this place called Tofino is so incredibly beautiful. And this was just before everything locked down. Essentially, as soon as we left, like 2 days later, the U.S. closed its borders to Europe with the flight ban, and Canada started locking everything down as well. So in terms of timing, couldn't have been better. But that was an epic trip. So fortunate to get that in before everything happened.
mate, you're obviously big on the video and photography and all that stuff as well. Like, you've been documenting most of this stuff.
Yeah, so like, I try and document where I can. Obviously, I don't want to take away from the lads, and I don't want to distract them by any means. So we've got like a strict social policy in tournaments, so we're not allowed to use our phone during tournaments, like no social media. So like the night before till the morning after the tournament, so like basically 2 to 3 days, we're not allowed to use, like, post on social media at all. Whereas you see some nations allowed to do that, just to say, make sure that like you're
trying. When you say posting on social media, you talking specifically off field, away from the game?
No, you just the can't do anything. You just can't have any socials posted at all. No tweets. No nothing. As when rugby is going. So say like if a tournament Saturday, Sunday, Friday night, 9 p.m. kind of thing, to like Monday morning, or like Sunday night, kind of depending on how you went during the weekend. There's a like an IRFU policy of no socials, just because that there's been incidents, I think, where people have posted stuff and it was taken in the wrong light, you know, and it just creates like a bit of turmoil and like distraction and stuff. So like from you won't see anything posted. So like documentation wise, it's very like, I'm trying to stick within those guidelines, right? So I'm not trying to be getting in anyone's way. So that's kind of why I document around the outskirts of like the week, you know, build up or whatever. So like if we're going into the city, like Sydney or LA, I'll bring my GoPro with me and with the lads, and they all like it. And like, I haven't put it together or anything yet, but it's just, I have those there. So if I ever want to do anything with that files or footage, you know, I could put maybe together like a little behind the scenes thing of one of the trips. So kind of a yes and a no answer in some respects, but definitely just documenting in general, I love to do.
Yeah. I think when Sean was on a couple of months ago, he said that you were planning a trip to Tonga after the World Series, and that's purely.
Yeah. So literally got an email last week saying that's have to be postponed, unfortunately, but it's for the better, of course. But yeah, like that, the idea was, Tonga, if anybody doesn't know, is an island down in the South Pacific, but they have this amazing experience where you can actually swim with humpback whales, like, you know, basically side by side. They venture up from the Antarctic to Tonga, to the warmer waters where they give birth, and use the warmer, shallower waters as a safe haven for their new calves, to let them strengthen up and build some size and learn and, you know, grow up essentially a small bit before they head back down to Antarctica to do all their feeding. So, in Tonga, it's one of the only places in the world where you're actually allowed in the water with them. Whereas like in the likes of Alaska and Canada and Boston have them, and other parts of the world, you have to, you know, sightsee from a ship. So I want to make, like, this is a bucket list trip for me, so I wanted to make the most out of it. And I organized for actually seven friends to go and do it. So we'll do it in 2021, hopefully now. But such a crazy trip. And that would be just completely outside of the sevens.
And obviously, Tonga being a big rugby nation as well, there's obviously an opportunity to tie some sort of rugby or community.
Yeah, I would absolutely love that. I mean, I went to Fiji for 3 weeks with my best friend from New York after the Sevens World Cup in San Francisco. You could fly directly to Fiji from San Fran, so it was a no-brainer, really. But I brought a suitcase, 30 kilos of gear in it to donate. And I ended up donating it to one of the villages that I was staying at. Just boots and t-shirts and shorts and socks, whatever we had at home. So if I had the opportunity again to do something like that in Tonga, yeah, I would absolutely try and figure something out. And I ended up, when I was in Fiji, like I lived with the team for 2 or 3 days, trained with them, ate with them. We slept in a community hall together. There was 30 guys, like all sleeping on these tiny little mattresses. They woke up at 4 a.m. to pray every morning and sing hymns. And then some guys would go to work. And I trained with Semirad Radra in his home village. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What a legend. Thanks. And like, he just rocked up to the back home to his village after the World Cup, like me. And, you know, just so happened to right place, right time that I went training with this club. And like, he came down, I was training with his brothers as well. And I was with Semi Kunantani, who plays in the Harlequins. We went for a couple of drinks one night. Yeah. The Nanduva. So he's, Mr. Nitro on the 7 Series for Fiji. He was, you know, from the village basically that I was staying in, and when I was down there, so I like hung out with him. So I've got a great connection with the islands and the people down there. So if I had an opportunity to do something like that in Tonga, I would lap it up straight away. That'd be great.
Definitely, mate. Well, obviously the yeah. stories could go on and on forever, but there's an off-field one particularly that I want to touch on. That's the Oktoberfest Sevens.
Oh, doesn't that just sound so great? The Oktoberfest Sevens. Like, what an awesome, perfect world.
How could you not come away
with a story?
I know,
right? If I didn't have a story from that, I'd be doing something wrong. But this story isn't about me. It's about one of the boys. So Adam Levy is on the Sevens team, a great player and a great friend. His brother is Dan Levy. So for more people in the 15s world, they might know that name. So Adam, at the best of times, can be a little clueless. Like I like to describe him kind of as like a rain man. You know, you'd explain something to him that'd be you'd think simple enough, and he'd kind of look at you like you got two heads. But then he would come out of the woodwork with something so intricate and so crazy and so smart that it's like, Jesus, Adam. Yeah. So for example. I got two stories about Adam. Okay, we'll get into the Oktoberfest one first, and then I'll give the Rayman one after. So anyway, Oktoberfest, we're there, and we play the tournament. And we weren't actually flying until Monday night. So that's a little bit weird for us, because usually we would fly out like kind of first thing Monday, or like Monday at 12, kind of at the latest, especially from a city with like a lot of flights leaving. You know, it's not like we're in Bosnia where there's one flight out, you know, back to Dublin or something. It was like Munich. So loads of flights. And we went out on the Sunday night and we had an absolute ball. We all bought lederhosen and just had the time of our lives. But the next day we actually had a post tournament function at Oktoberfest itself. So there was tables reserved for us, everything. And we just had a stern wording basically saying like, okay, guys, like, take it easy. If anybody's in any bad shape when they get to the airport, like they're being left behind, they're not allowed on the flight. Like, you're representing Ireland and, you know, making sure that everyone's like pretty straight lined. So we're like, fair enough, grand. And then they said 3 o'clock, I believe, everyone outside the front of the tent and we're going. And if you're not there at 3, we're leaving you behind. Like, we're not staying. So
I know where this is going.
We're there, 2:55 or whatever. Everyone's at the front, and we're kind of standing there. And we're actually with Dave Vore, who is basically one of the top men of the entire IRFU. Like, he basically looks after the whole of the IRFU. And he's there, and he's basically being our leader and, like, bringing us out of the tent and walking us out like to where we have to go. So we're all waiting there, and then it's 3 o'clock, 3:01, 3:02, like, where's Adam Levy? 3:04, 3:05, like, getting like a little bit later, everyone's getting a little itchy. It's like, where the hell's Adam Levy? No sign of Adam Levy. And you know, the stern word of "we're leaving you here" is kind of popping up, and everyone was like, "Oh no, we were with Adam. He went to go to the bathroom. Like, we all went to the bathroom. We don't know how he's disappeared. You know, it's not like he disappeared an hour ago or anything." So, yeah, gets to like 3:15, still can't find him. And then I think 3:20, Dave Nussbaum's phone rings, and it's Adam Levy's parents, I believe. Or it could have been my mom, actually. It was my mom. Sorry. So my mom rings at David Nussbaum to tell him that Adam Levy is at the airport. A roundabout way, Adam rang his parents. His parents rang my mom. My mom used to work with David's sister as an air hostess, so there's that family connection. So she had David's number and rang David to tell him. And Adam basically took the wrong exit out of the bathroom, couldn't find anybody, couldn't figure out where we were meant to be because he was kind of just following everyone. So then got in the closest taxi possible and got a straight line to the airport on his own. It was an 80-euro taxi. Didn't tell anybody, couldn't get in contact with anyone. But it just summed him up. It was just brilliant. And the fumes coming out of David's ears was just hilarious. But, you know, at least it wasn't a case of him getting too drunk and being left behind. And then, another story of him real quick was that we were in London, or Paris, after one of the World Series, a series that we actually got invited to when we beat England in London to go third place in the series. So it was Paris just after that. And there was a post-tournament function. But anyway, we left. And we were going to the five-star hotel, beautiful lobby, and there's a piano. And all of a sudden, you just hear the piano playing. And you turn around, and it's Adam Levy, and he's playing Rocket Man by Elton John. Yeah. And that's I had awesome. No idea that he could play the piano. He would have been the last person on Earth that I thought could play it. And we're all around, 13 of us, singing Rocket Man, belting it through the lobby. And it was just incredible. He's a great guy. He adds a lot of value, and he keeps you on your toes, to say the least.
So basically, the Irish boys on the 7th World Series are winning the off-field.
Look, we like to have a bit of crack, and you know, you can't take yourself so serious all the time, right? Like, you're traveling around the world, you're 2 weeks on the road, and it can become so much, you know, especially for a lot of the guys. So when you have an opportunity to relax, like, you need to be able to take those opportunities. And team bonding is such a huge thing. It's, you know, people can get on top of each other really quickly, and it can cause disagreements and stuff. So you need to make sure that everyone's on the same page and feeling good and enjoying themselves while they're on tour, because that's half the battle. You know, if someone has a bad game in sevens, the benefit is like, an hour or 2 hours later, you're playing another game. You can let that, you can forget about that game straight away. But if you had a bad week, geez, it's really hard to come by and get by all that. So you want to make everybody's enjoying themselves.
100%, mate. And then, so just on quarantine and what's going on right now, then is the Irish Sevens team sort of giving you?
So we've got a program sent out to us like 4 days a week. We are very fortunate with our training in terms of we have a full facility in North Dublin that has been closed for health reasons, obviously, but prior to a closing, we were allowed to go in and take home weights. So I've got like a barbell, about 100 kilos worth of plates. I've got like 40 kilo dumbbells and some bands and skipping ropes. So I was able to basically bring home like a mini gym. So I can do everything in terms of a weight session. We also live next door to a rugby pitch. So there's a school that's next door. So I have access to the pitch, so I can do all my running. I don't really have to worry about trying to drive somewhere and figure out where I'm going to go or go into a park. It's quite secluded as well, so I don't have to worry about bumping into anybody else. So from my point of view, and most of the guys, in fairness, we're all pretty much in a good position to keep training and stay fit and healthy. And and keep working hard. So we're in talks with the RFU, and they're in talks with the government and also World Rugby in terms of next moves and how training can go ahead, and the pros and cons to sevens. Like, there's half the amount of people playing, so the touch contact time is technically half, I guess, is how it's been described to us, which means that the contact time falls within a certain degree, and that degree allows you to do a certain amount of training. You know, all these hypotheses that are coming about. Yeah. So looks like, well, the talk is late June, there might be opportunity to do some small number training, you know, in small groups. Yeah. But they're working on a whole procedure, and it's all that boring stuff. But essentially, yeah, we're looking at late June, probably, which would be cool to, you know, see the guys again and stuff. I have had like one or two coffees with a couple of the guys, but realistically, I've just been home, haven't really done much, just gone to the shop and just doing my own thing, really.
Yeah, well, mate, away from the rugby stuff, it looks like just from social media, you're winning quarantine at the moment with all the cooking and the creative content that you're pushing out. Like, talk us through that stuff. Like, you've always had a passion for the cooking.
It's an interesting one because my sister, right, that I live with, like, asked me last week, she's like, when did you get into cooking? I was like, I've got a food science degree. Like, I have a bachelor's essentially in a food degree. So I've always liked cooking. I was actually a picky eater growing up, but I've gotten better. I eat pretty much normal now, but essentially with rugby, we were in training for half seven in the morning. So I would just make a smoothie when I got up. Right. And then I would have lunch at the grounds, and at our facility now, there's like a full cater service. So there's food there. And then I'd usually try and sneak dinner home, like if there was dinner left over. So I wasn't acting much while I was training. If I did, it would be one meal. And realistically, the depths I went into in terms of cooking would be not that far, just because I wanted to cook as quickly as possible, eat, and then go to bed. But now that I'm home, I'm allowed to, or I'm able to express myself a bit more in the kitchen and kind of do things and find new ingredients. So, man, like, I've learned how to create, like, make sourdough bread, which is like a process and a half. It's about 18 hours, 24 hours just to make one loaf. And I'm currently in the process of making one right now, which is great. And I'm loving it. And we made ramen one day from scratch. I made homemade ice cream, did like beer can chicken. Sean and I are doing these incredible turkey burgers. Turkey mince or turkey meat in general is usually quite dry, but by creating a burger and cooking, like basically searing the outside and then sticking it in the oven, they stay really juicy. So we found a really nice way to have turkey meat, and it's so lean as well. So we're really getting creative. We're trying new things and having a blast. We just got our barbecue and the sun's out. So we're out there cooking up, and it's allowing me to be creative too. Right now I get to take some content of some food and trying to integrate that into my social media, and people seem to really be enjoying it. And I'm really enjoying it as well, which is actually the key to all this, is as long as I'm enjoying it, then I don't have to worry about anybody else. Yeah, exactly. So it's nice to see that other people are enjoying it as well.
So, mate, then the recipe book's
coming out. Man, I was thinking, right?
A couple of weeks, or
I don't know about a recipe book yet. A bit early days. But I was like, I'm going to hopefully be able to maybe do one or two videos. Like, so say like the turkey burgers that Sean and I kind of created ourselves and came up with the recipe ourselves. Maybe do like a YouTube video around it. But I think name A Pinch of Salty, I think, is a great name. So I think it's kind of, you know, like there a pinch go. Of salt, salty, yeah.
We'll yeah, start let's a,
see.
Poll.
A pinch of see, salty see is what I'm going for. But yeah, maybe do a couple things like that. I stuck up a 30-second YouTube video on how to make the ice cream. So, you know, that's super short and sharp. And hopefully people will just click on that and see it and just, you know, give them a little bit of confidence and to go make something new, step out of their comfort zone and make something really tasty. I don't want to bore them with a 15-minute tutorial on how to do it when it doesn't take that long. So just trying little snippets of different things and seeing what works and what I put out there. But yeah, at the end of the day, I'm having a lot of fun, and it's good family bonding too.
Mate, that's awesome. Hey, I guess the next thing then is with all the creative stuff that you're sort of doing outside of rugby, like what are the plans or dreams to kind of grow
such a great question, and something that I'm always thinking about. And there's a couple avenues that I'd love to go down. I guess it's right to be able to like secure your place and really put yourself forward, or give yourself like even just have the confidence to think like, yeah, like, you know, I can be the best at this. I'm trying and I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. Would love to, you know, be more impactful and be get more engagement and really have an audience that really cares about what I'm doing. And I love helping people as well. So that engagement really means a lot to me. So I've set up some online tutorials. I've done about 5 or 6 of them, which I've loved. I've do like a half an hour and an hour one. So maybe going on the line is like actually having an online kind of learning tutorial like that, so people could just pay for and have access to the learning, so that it's just more accessible. Yep. But then also offer the one-to-ones as well, which I love. I would love to use my photography and video skills to put together some conservation work. So yeah, going to like different parts of the world and working with people who are, you know, so deep in the field and need that outreach. So trying to work on conservation stuff, it's a real close passion of mine. I finished an online course in ecology and human interaction actually the other week. So love to do that. And then yeah, working with brands and working with people that I would love, like, you know, we align our visions with. So companies who are into conservation, or companies that are into trying to help the planet, or, you know, those one percenters, or coming out with new technologies and trying new things. I'd, you know, keep working with brands like that. And a couple ideas, loads of ideas, working on stuff in the background now at the moment. So I don't know what the future holds, but I would really love to be able to help others at the end of the day, essentially.
Mate, that's awesome. I think just on that, like in terms of exposure, obviously one of the big focuses for this podcast is just giving exposure to players away from the field.
Yeah.
They probably don't do enough of. So I think like a simple thing for you, obviously, is just the way that your video documenting your travels and sort of the away from the game stuff is pretty awesome. So maybe there's last dance
30 for 30 or whatever. Like even that, you know, bringing that topic up, like commentary or, you know, working with TV, like have my own show on something, or being on a show like a Survivor or something like that, I would love to do. Or even like, yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not at that level yet, but like have a cooking show or something where I can teach and learn and be myself and give others confidence to do something new. And I would love something like that. So, you know, I have so many things going on. I don't know what the hell I'm doing kind of thing, but it's great. It keeps me busy.
I can hear the wheels turning already, mate. Yeah. It's good. It's good. Well, it's been awesome having you on, mate. I think we've just flown through almost an hour's worth of chat.
I know. How about this? We set it up another one, but we have like one specific topic that we'll just delve into and spin a yarn for an hour. I'm happy to do that. I would love that.
I think we have to.
Conversation. I spoke for most of it, so I feel sorry for any listeners that they didn't get any a break in my voice, but tried to be quick. Yeah, but no, I thank you so much. I appreciate you reaching out to me, give me a chance to, you know, showcase myself a little bit and say a little bit about where I've been and what I've done. And hopefully there's maybe a little bit of inspiration in there for somebody else to try something new, or sevens, or documenting, traveling, whatever it may be. So thank you very much, Har.
No, of course, mate. And then obviously just for the listeners, we'll tag Harry and all his handles there. So any of the content that we've talked about over the last hour, you can go straight to his social handles and see it.
Epic.
In live action. So
that would be fantastic. Yeah, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
All right, brother. Well, mate, we'll be in touch.
Definitely. Yeah, sounds good.
Second episode in the coming weeks.
Thanks, brother.
All right.
Bye.
Take care.